on this episode of World Affairs. The story of an underground hospital in Syria, depicted in the Academy Award-nominated film, The Cave. Hello, I'm Philip Yun, CEO of World Affairs. Our weekly broadcast is produced in partnership with KQED. It's made possible by the generous support of Chevron and TPG.
And the Oscar goes to Parasite.
The big headline from this year's Academy Awards belonged to Parasite. The Korean film won 4 Oscars, including Best Picture, making it the first foreign language film to do so. Full disclosure here, as a Korean American, I can say that I am particularly proud. But Parasite wasn't the only international film recognized this year. In the feature documentary category, all but one of the films nominated were foreign made. And even that one had an international focus. Among the nominees was The Cave, directed by Firas Fayad. Ray Suarez takes it from here.
The year is 2013. Syrian President Bashar al-Assad has launched a relentless bombing campaign in eastern Ghouta, a suburb of Damascus. Residents find salvation in a secret underground hospital. It's known as The Cave. Through constant bombardment, food shortages, and an endless stream of victims, The Cave's staff miraculously provides health care and dignity to its patients. In the operating room, one surgeon explains, "We don't have anesthesia, but we have music." The hospital's unlikely director is a 29-year-old woman, Dr. Amani Balur. In a patriarchal society, she is a force and an inspiration. For 6 years, she manages to keep The Cave running while making room, even in the worst circumstances, for pockets of joy. In 2018, after an apparent chemical attack by the Syrian government, Dr. Amani and her staff are forced to evacuate The Cave. Documenting it all is film director Firas Fayad. He captures Dr. Amani's poignant story in a National Geographic film also called The Cave. For Fayad, this is a deeply personal story. He's a Syrian, now living in exile in Denmark. He had been jailed and tortured by the Assad regime while making the 2017 film, The Last Men in Aleppo, which was also nominated for an Academy Award. I spoke with Firas Fayad and Dr. Amani Balur a few days before this year's Oscars ceremony. Firas, there are filmmakers who work their whole careers, and good ones, who never get a single Oscar nomination. And yet here you are with your second one. What was your reaction when you heard the word?
I was really grateful for the community of the Academy who support this film to be recognitions and get, like, because this is what open the way to be seen strongly from everyone. I was very proud, and I feel really strongly that what we have been sacrifice and trying to do to bring these stories for the world out to be seen, it's been supported strongly from that.
Were you aware of the existence of the hospital in Ghouta that's the setting of The Cave? How did you find out about it, and how did you feel compelled to make a movie about it?
When we start doing this movie, we shoot in 7 hospitals. We was two teams. Yeah, I was aware about the system of the underground hospital, because there was a way for protect the doctor, the doctor to protect themselves, to protect their the victims from the daily bomb, because the Russians and Syrian regime was intentionally attacking hospital. So the doctor finds a way like to move the whole most of the hospital underground to protect for that reason. And I knew about Dr. Amani. I heard about her from a little long, and that because also like the Syria is a small country. I'm a Syrian, so I know this story that happening. I know the people who is really doing important things for the society. So I decided to shoot in civil hospital. I make two teams, team in Eastern Ghouta and team in Idlib. I was with a team in Idlib, inside Syria, and the other team was in Eastern Ghouta, who was start to communicate and film with Dr. Amani.
Dr. Balour, tell us about the cave hospital today. Is it still operating?
No, it's closed today. Assad regime and Russia controlled the area and closed it.
And what condition is the city in itself?
Now, I couldn't contact a lot with people there because they are very afraid. They can't talk. They can't talk anything. They can't communicate with others because the oppression of Assad regime. Anyone talk any word about freedom, about the revolution, they arrest them. But I know that the situation is too bad. Now, the economy of Syria is destroyed day by day, so people are suffering there. There's a very bad health system in Syria.
For people who haven't seen the movie, Dr. Balour, you are a pediatrician, and some of the most heartbreaking scenes, some of the worst scenes to watch when you're sitting in the theater, involve children being brought in injured. Will these children, even if they recover from their physical wounds, ever recover from the wounds of growing up in a place like Ghouta?
Yes, the most difficult thing is working with children, is watching them while they're suffering every day. They were starving during these years. They were afraid of everything. The warplanes and all types of weapons were always on the sky. We hear always these sounds. Fear is controlled everywhere. Always the children just watch the destruction and the blood and dead bodies. This is very scaring. And we were scared also as doctors, as adults. All of us, we were afraid of everything. So we try to support children. And after 6 years of siege, I always say no one survived. No one survived from Al Ghouta, from these long years of siege and bombing and starvation. Children still remember everything. And they are now still suffering inside of Syria. And that's why we all worried about them, because the situation is still continue. Bombing is now the countryside of Idlib still being bombed. Now 1.7 million people displaced recently in just last month, and there's nowhere to go. And detainees in Assad regime prisons. Also, there's children in the prisons are being tortured, so they can't recover.
What about you? Are you still suffering the effects of being exposed to so much suffering, so much trauma, day after day, week after week?
I'm here in safe place, but I'm thinking about the children there. They're still suffering. I can't forget them. I can't forget everything. And I will never forget that. So I just care about them, and I'm here and everywhere to be their voice, to get attention for them, to ask everyone, every country, every politician to help them to stop this war.
How did the hospital end up underground?
It's scaring to work underground, under bombing. We were in the hospital, and every hospital in Ghouta is a target of bombing, and they bomb us a lot. It's dark, and it's a scaring place. We were afraid. We try to find a happy moment to still alive, to survive. But everything we see during these long years, just blood and dead bodies and people afraid and have painful. So it's not a life underground. We were just dreaming to see the sunlight, to have a fresh air. This is very, it's a very brutal way to deal with the especially with the medical staff. We were there to help people, to save lives, and they were bombing us. And this very shame on the international community because they don't protect us, don't protect children.
Why did you let Firas Fayad and his photographers come into your hospital?
Firas suggested the idea after about 3 or 4 years of siege and every bad things. We were hopeless of everything. International community do nothing for us, just watching us while we're dying. We believed that time that no one will survive. And I discussed with Firas the importance of telling the truth. We want to tell people the truth about what's happening. We want all the people around the world to know about Syrian struggle, Syrian people's struggle. They want to Syrian people want some simple demands. They want their freedom, dignity, and some human rights. We have no human rights in Syria. And the brutal way with Assad regime and his allies, how they deal with civilians. We were civilians, and about 100,000 child in Al-Ghouta under siege. So we want people to know that. And we hope that maybe the situation changed after people see the film. And that's why, and I trusted Firas because he was in the place. He was in a place next to Al-Ghouta, and he was in Assad regime prisons. He's been tortured for a long time. He knew the truth, and I wanted him to tell this truth. He believed in the same goals. He had the same goal, and he believed that in Syrian revolution. That's why I wanted him to tell this story.
Firas Fayad, you had some difficult creative choices to make. Your videographers got in very close to people who were in terrible suffering. We saw the blood, we saw the wounds, we saw the terror on the part of these patients being rushed into this underground hospital. Was it tough for your crew to work at such close quarters with the doctors, to work underground, to work in such cramped conditions?
Of course, it was so hard and not easy things for them to do, and they have to jump and help that the medical crew, or they have to film what they see. Not easy choice, because my team, what's happening in front of us, this is people means for us. This is people of our country that we share them the language, we share them houses. Those people there didn't do anything. They're just civilians, have nothing. They want to just live their life, their daily lives. And somehow, also my cinematographer, they have not to stay in the hospital during the shooting, because also they could take a space from the victims, and they could also like if they stay, it could like also like in general way, like if they use the electricity from the hospital, they could take the importance from saving lives. And as I said, we was filming in 7 hospitals actually. Dr. Amani and all the character you saw in the film, they have no idea that they will end in the films. I was kept filming in 7 hospitals. I was with a team in northern of Syria, in Idlib area, where we was filming another hospital with another team. And I was asking my cinematographer, who was living with Dr. Amani in the cave, to following her. But even my cinematographer, they didn't know that their footage will end in the final film. And I was in all the time in communication with the Dr. Amani about the situation. And I was facing the same things with my other team in other hospital, that show you the whole idea of that all the hospital in Syria was under intentional attack. But when I decide like to make the story, I decide like to make a story about the whole stories of this hospital in one hospital. There is one hospital and there's a female doctor, because the incredible story of Dr. Amani, she's the first manager in history of Syria to direct an hospital. Her work is not just saving lives, her work also to support a woman and support the children who is like suffering from trauma. And was that the end of the story? I removed all my footage that I filmed by myself, and I put a footage heritage of my cinematographer. When I show that the footage, the final film for Dr. Amani was surprising. She told me, this is my story. And I told her, yeah, this is the story. She said, no, you should put the other doctor and you should put the other hospital. This is important. And they have to, you have to show that the whole stories. I said, your story will explain the whole, will be a symbolism for the whole other hospital. Everyone will understand. Everyone will live with you. I need these people to see it and involve in seeing that. And I need to encourage them that maybe any action coming from them could stop the genocide that happening in Syria and the ongoing bomb that happening in Syria.
Dr. Balour, when Feras showed you the footage from the hospital, was it hard to watch?
Yes, it was very hard to watch because I remember everything and I was out of Syria. I remember the medical staff. We were as a big family in the hospital, so I cried a lot when I watched it. And yeah, I surprised when I watched it because they film a lot and there were a lot of hard things. But I asked Firas to put it in the film because I saw it and I wanted people to see that, to see how Assad regime, how Russia, who are talking that they are fighting terrorist people, how they deal with the children, how they kill the children. There were dead bodies for children. Children lost their legs, their hands. And this is very hard to see. And I discussed that a lot with Firas. And then, yeah, I convinced that the way he make this film, and we don't want people to be very, very sad and cry after watching. We want them to make action to help Syria. And this is our goal from this film.
I should tell people who are listening to this program that it's not all injury and suffering and bombing. A lot of the movie is that. But there are also wonderful, intimate moments with you and your team celebrating birthdays. Making meals with the very little food that you're able to scrape together. Joking with each other. You have a great relationship with your partners. And also the kind of relationship that you have with people that you have worked with in difficult situations. I think the audience will fall in love with you and your doctors and your nurses.
Actually, we want to survive. That's why we try to create these happy moments. We want to laugh to survive. We are humans. We are not machines. And we must work to help people. We stayed to help people. And this is what we want to do. That was very difficult to still working all the time with fear. We were afraid. We are humans. We are afraid. And we try to support the children and say, tell them not to be afraid. Tell them that you're going to survive. You have to think about the future. That wasn't easy to us. That's why we try to be family, to support each other. This relationship between us support us to continue working.
One of the many beautiful scenes in the movie involves an emergency operation. One of the surgeons loves to have classical music on when he's doing his work. And he mentions that there's not sufficient anesthesia, but he does have this beautiful music. And we see on a cell phone... It's just amazingly incongruous to watch on this piece of modern technology, this cell phone, maybe five stories below the surface, Seiji Ozawa acting as the conductor for a symphony orchestra. It's an amazing moment.
Dr. Salim was, he was like, try to from his experience, try like to put the people in get anxiety and the fear and the stress from the crew around him, and also like he normally also like try like to make the victims less stressed, and he keep try to talk and make the people relax because the music that help him like to talk and relax himself. Also, this is a situation that was happening around, and try like it was like a kind of funny moment there where he was sometimes sit and try like to open a conversation about the music to make the people think outside of all the chaos chaos situations and all this is barbaric situation around them. And I feel this is important to be part of from the story, because it show you like an surrealism situation where the people, those people find a creative way to survive and have a fun in the middle of this is brutal bomb around them and death around them.
Dr. Balur, do you remember moments like that? I mean, along with the terror and the suffering and the sadness, do you remember good times down in the cave?
Yeah, I remember the medical staff, and some of them were the young men, and they tried to make me laugh all the time. I remember when Samahir cooked for us, and we were very happy together. And yeah, I remember when I saved some lives for the children, and they were very happy, and their families were very happy after that. That's very great work. I will never forget.
Feras mentioned that you were the first woman in Syria to run a hospital. We see, during the movie The Cave, a man challenging you about the job that you're doing at the hospital, and you standing up for women doctors. Even in wartime, that old male attitude comes out. When I was watching it in a theater with a large audience, some people laughed that even in this tremendous difficulty where every doctor was needed, there was a man who was willing to talk back to you and tell you you shouldn't be doing this work. Were you surprised?
Yes, I wasn't surprised, but that was very frustrating. That made me always angry and under a high pressure. I wasn't surprised because I know the culture in our community. This is the custom, and this culture from long time, all the men believe that they have the right to control everything, to control women. Women should stay at home and work and get married. This is the image about women in our community. But I wanted to challenge them, to prove that we can do more, that we may can do better than the men. I was a doctor, and the other managers of the hospital were doctors. I study like them. I'm working with them in the same hospital at the same circumstances. So I can do as they do, or maybe better. So I believe that I want to approve that women can continue working, and I wanted to make this hospital bigger and successful. So I decided to challenge them, and that was more pressure to me because I'm a woman. I wanted to be a manager of the hospital, a pediatrician, work everything like as a manager, and above of that, I want to support women, empower them, to give the right image about women, to change this situation, this culture in our community. We need to change this.
Dr. Balur, did you change anybody's mind? Were there men who, by the time you were ready to leave Syria, who were convinced that this was the right thing for you to do?
Yes, yes, I did. And I was so happy because when I started working as a manager of the hospital, other men came to me and said, "You can't, you are a woman, it's not your position." But after about 2 years, the hospital were a central hospital in the area. I protected and supported from bombing. We make journals, and we had a good medical supplies and medicine to help people. So at the last campaign in 2018, before we left, some hospital around us were destroyed by bombing, but our hospital, the cave, stay. They bomb us a lot, but they couldn't destroy it because I protect it. And we're still working for the last moment. So some men came to me and say, "You were right. You succeed in this job." And I was very happy because I could change this very long culture and ideas they have. And that's great. And that make me believe that we can change everything in the world.
Feras, are there scenes that you gathered during the shooting that were just too much for the movie, that were too intense for an audience? Did you have to make some decisions about what an audience could take?
Yeah, well, there is a lot of scenes that I like those moment that we capture that we wish to put them, but it was so hard. Like, for example, there's the chemical attack of 2013. I was really want to put it in the film because it was the use of the sarin gassing the people in Eastern Ghouta. And it was there was 1,500 people, mostly children and women, killed in that moment. And I feel like I have the responsibility to show it. But when, but I understand that nobody will come and sit and see this because it's the size of that tragedy, the size of the suffer for this children. For me as a Syrian who knew that, who been through this, but it makes me sick. I thought like it was difficult, but it was also important. But there's another moment, there's a children who lost their hands, legs, another children who's like his heart is open because of a bump. You see like his injuries, like the injuries is opening his chest, and you see his heart is still beating, and the doctor, they're working hard like to save his life. I feel like nobody can see this is moment. It's difficult to see, and that was, I really wanna show it, because you know, just imagine that child. He's looking around him. He don't understand what's going on, and his, you see in the shot that his heart is still beating and it's opens. How's the doctor working hard, including Dr. Amani, that was working hard to find a way like to close his chest and fix the injuries.
It's a balancing act, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, you want the movie to be hard to watch because you're trying to communicate to people in other places in the world just how terrible this situation is, but I guess there might be a line where it just becomes too much.
True, I this is what was the line. It was so much like one of this question Dr. Amani, she told me there's many situations you should use it. It's difficult, and it's not, you should use it, should make the people watch it. And it was like saying like, no, we need people like to sit and see that. And we try to show and not show. This is what we was like the idea, how we can make the people feel. So we focus our camera mostly on the trauma that the doctors who are working there, they are facing, and the size of the bomb and the bombing. There is a moment, of course, there is a hard moment to go through it, but there is also the reflect of this hard moment on the character who's living there, like on Dr. Amani and the other doctors, to see the size of the crimes that happening in front of those doctor and their limited choices. Just imagine this situation happening in any country in here in the United States, and people, their hospital, the place where they have to survive and leave, it's being bombed. And a couple of doctors stay to save the life. This is, if it's happened in any country, it's gonna be shame in all the world. What's happening in my country, it's a shame on all the world that didn't stop. It's the medical facilities where the people can find the hope, where if they want to stop refugee crisis, if they are fear from refugee crisis, they have to find way to draw lines up front of attacking hospital because the people will run.
There are points in the movie, speaking as a member of the audience, that you almost want to look away because it's so difficult to watch. The intimacy of someone being terrified, and you're right there with them, looking straight in the face. It was very difficult to watch. I'm wondering, Dr. Balur, whether you ever got used to having the cameras around. Were you conscious that they were there? Or after a while, and you're so busy doing the work that you have to do, do you forget that they're there?
Yes, it was not easy at the beginning because I'm not actress and I didn't used to see cameras around me. But the hospital was crowded of people, injuries, people around us, and people are screaming. And I was so busy. I wanted to do a lot of things. I had to be a manager of the hospital to get medicine, medical supplies in besieged area to make the challenge, to protect the hospital, the patients, and the medical staff. And to be a pediatrician in my clinic and to hear the children every day. So, of course, I didn't care about the camera after that.
Were there some things that you told the cameras, no, sorry, you can't come here, you can't see this, you can't be here? Or were you really open the whole time?
Yes, I asked them a lot to stop filming. When I saw the camera close to me, I was angry too many times because of bobbing the dead bodies, the children around me. And I asked them to stop filming because I believe that no one cares about us. No one will do anything to change the situation. It lasted for long years and no one cares. Yeah, when I saw the camera close, I asked them a lot to stop. But they were patient with me and they want to continue their work. And I'm proud now because they did that. I hope that the situation now will end, the war end, and they stop bombing. But that's good to show all the people the truth. And that's very important to us as Syrians.
You've both said that you want the world to see the reality of the situation in Syria. What do you want the world, and specifically the United States, what do you want American listeners to this program to know about your country? For us?
What I wish the people take from who kind of watch this film, or this is a story, because it's also like, it's sometimes like seeing film, it's not realistic. It's the story of our life. What I want the people to see and take from that, try like to put pressure on the politician, write a paper for their representative in that they elected. I think a letter from every single person, it could put a lot of pressure on political situation. We need the hospital to be safe. We need the doctor to be safe. The impact of this film, we focus on the human resources, the people who is working as a doctor, because we need them to be safe and protected and not being in dangerous situation. As well, we wish this film can bring the peace to Syria. I think if it's been seen from the right people, from the people who has a huge influencer on the society, I think those people can have a word to manage, to impact and put a pressure to stop the current situation in Syria, the daily bomb. What the people will see in this story, it's still happening. The bomb is still happening right now in Idlib, in northern of Syria, in countryside of Aleppo. It's still happening.
And Dr. Balour, same question. What do you want to tell Americans and the rest of the world through the movie The Cave?
Yes, as Faraz said, we want to stop killing people, and this is the urgent thing we need. Stop killing people in northern of Syria to help the displaced people. There are millions in the cold without anything. They have no food, nothing for heating, and the children, 2 million, more than 2 million child without schools, without education. This is a catastrophic situation. This is very urgent, and they should, the United Nations and the America, the U.S., as a big country, they should take their responsibility for these people. They always talk about the human rights, and we are humans in Syria, and also the detainees in Assad regime prisons. We need the help for them. They are hundreds of thousands people. They are in the prisons being tortured for long years, and no one care about them. And as a long-term demands, we want justice, and we want to finish this war and get these criminals to justice. Assad, Bashar al-Assad and his regime, Russia and Iran, they should get accountable about what they did in Syria and still doing.
Do you think, doctor, that it will ever be safe for you to go back to your home in Syria?
Someday I will go back, but of course not now, after get rid of Bashar al-Assad, his regime, and the occupation of Syria, Russia and Iran forces. Of course, I want to come back. It's my dream to come back to Syria. And as Syrian, we can rebuild our country without them, these criminals.
And Faraz Fayad, same question. You're also living in exile. Can you imagine a day when you'll be able to return to Syria and live?
I wish that, to be realistic, I don't think it's something that could happen in easy way, because Russian control the country. Russian, they have their influence on the future of Syria. And this is, we can't remove the real side of that. The Russian regime, they don't believe in democracy. They believe in dictatorship. But I will keep telling the stories from that country in every single way that I can manage to do. I need to keep that, because I believe the power of the media and power of journalism, power of the cinema, that can change. if it didn't change right now, in this moment, it can educate the people, and then in the future could build a way for something could be changed.
Beraz Fayad is the filmmaker responsible for the Oscar-nominated The Cave. Good to have you with us, sir.
Thank you so much, sir, for having me here.
And Dr. Amani Ballour is the director of the hospital we see in the film The Cave. A pleasure to talk to you, ma'am.
Thank you.
You've been listening to World Affairs. We're more than a program. We're a nonprofit membership organization dedicated to engaging the public in conversations that matter. Please join our community and visit us at worldaffairs.org. World Affairs is produced in partnership with KQED. Our technical supervisor is Jim Bennett. We had engineering help from Robert Frazier. Our producer is Jared Sport, and our executive producer is Joanne Jennings. I'm Philip Yun. Thank you for joining us.